What we're trying to do during this week is not really astrology, but it's looking at some ideas. And these thoughts are meant to, you know, parallel the evening thoughts. And in the evening thoughts, we're talking about spiritual exercises for becoming better people, unfolding better consciousness, and evolving. And what we're doing with these thoughts is we're looking at astrological aspects as tools of consciousness, as the means that we use to accomplish things. The means, they're not tools, they apply to tools, as we see in the world, like the conjunction is like a needle or a nail or something that concentrates everything to make a breakthrough, and the opposition is like a lever of one kind or another, and the trine is like an inclined plane, a knife blade or something of that order. And today we're going to talk about the square, which is a different kind of consciousness. Now, yesterday we spoke about the trine and triangles, and we were pretty abstract about it. And that was by intention, because the trine is the symbol of spirit. It represents manifest perfection. And spirit is transcendent, which means automatically that it is abstract. Now, among the things that we mentioned yesterday is that if you have three points that make a triangle, those three points are the simplest way to tell where you are, and to tell when you are. And if you look at it in terms of the third point being the self, the divine father and the divine mother, it tells you who you are. Who, what, when, and where are in the simplest way described by the triangle. Now, our human consciousness as it is now is just not suited to talk about transcendence. Things. Almost everyone who's had experiences of the transcendental spiritual worlds has said they're ineffable. They can't be put into our kind of language. Some people try to do it, and they do a pretty good job of it, as we did last night, listen to what was said by Meister Eckhart. And it was very strange, the things that he said, despite all that strangeness, they brought across spiritual ideas. Now, we can do abstraction because we have an abstract mind, but it's not our greatest strength because we haven't really developed that. Someday we will be able to do that. And this very fact that we don't have the consciousness that relates to the transcendent spiritual worlds can even be proven by abstract mathematics. Suppose we have a triangle, any kind of triangle, and we want to know how much area that triangle contains. That is, how big it is. So if you just take and put a triangle like that, any kind on the board. It's a simple, very simple formula. What you do is you, from some one of the three vertices, you drop a normal, which is a right angle line, and that's called the height. And the side that receives the right angle is called the base. And it's a simple formula that you learn in geometry, that the area of a triangle equals one half of the base times the height. Simple, we all probably did it in either grade school or high school. We learned how to do that. And suppose, for example, this is 2, and this is 6, which looks awfully much like the universe. Then we have 2 times 6 is 12. and half of that is six. So the area of this is six units. Maybe. Because when you say six units, those units are squares. Meaning to say, if this is 2 inches and this is 6 inches, then this is 6 square inches, the area of this triangle. And so we're trying to understand the triangle, and the only way we can measure the triangle is with the square. And that tells us about the nature of our consciousness. Prime consciousness is perfectly objective consciousness, but it is abstract. The square represents concrete consciousness, so that with the square, the triangle relates to spirit and the relationship of spirit to matter, four bodies or threefold spirit, produces, we might say, our heavenly home. And so what we're talking about here is trying to understand something. Earlier we said that the circle represented the unmanifest spirit, with no beginning, no end, and being located everywhere. It isn't a finalized or perfected spirit. But if you try to measure a circle, you measure it in terms of squares. And you can never get exactly the number of squares to equal the circle. All you have is an approximation. The formula for that is the area of the circle equals pi r square. Pi is the relationship of the circumference of the circle to the diameter. Yeah. And so that is a relationship that is a number that never ends. And some people spend all of their time, spend all of their computer power trying to make the highest number of carrying algebra by just so many points. How many is off? Several points now. 3 million points or something like that. So any area, any shape at all, pick a blob shape like this. If you try to measure it, the only way you can measure it is to break it into squares. So there is something about the human consciousness, or the manifest consciousness, or the concrete consciousness, relative to the transcendent abstract consciousness, that even though the concrete consciousness must always be imperfect, even though that is the case, it is the consciousness that we understand and that we can work with. And that is what the square consciousness is all about. When we say a person is on the square, we're saying that that person is being tested or tried to find out what their nature really is. No one ever does perfectly. There's always something that moves us on. And this is the same for the spirit as it is for the human being. The spirit realizes that it can't perfect the material world. It can't take the square and turn it into a circle. But that's the challenge that's the challenge to the spirit. What happens is, think of a dream. You have a creative dream of something you'd like to do, and then you try to manifest it. And when you try to manifest it, it never comes out the way you want it to. There's always some snag. The materials don't respond the way you want them to. Or your idea wasn't quite right. And what happens is, even though there is always imperfection, because the spirit has accepted the challenge of matter And because it has done the best that it can, matter is forever transformed. And the essence of the experience of that matter is taken into the spirit. And this means that the spirit is transformed. If we kept things in the state of a creative dream and never brought them into imperfection, they would become insipid. We would be dreamers, and people criticize dreamers for only being dreamers. But when we bring it into the world, even if it isn't what you wanted, I've never talked to an artist that felt that the creation was what they wanted to be. But what happens to the dream after one has tried to manifest it is that the dream is much more vivid. It's much more real, it's much more true, because of the soul material, because of the experience, because of the knowledge that has been gained in the process of trying to do the impossible. The spirit gives itself completely, and it tries to realize something. And it does realize something, it realizes itself. We've been talking about spiritual exercises. We've been seeing how difficult most of those exercises are to do. But when you try to do them and you give it your all, this vivifies. It wakes up the spirit like never before. And so even though you may not be perfect at the exercises, I'm far from perfect. I'm even kind of irregular about good performance of the exercises. But I know, and I know from experience, that doing them does change us, it does wake us up, and it does make us better in things. And so what we're talking about then is that relationship of the triangular consciousness, which we talked about yesterday, versus the concrete, definitive knowledge that one gets in carrying something into the material world, into the physical world. Now, by now, we're way away from the north, so I'll have to try and find myself again here.
We did it for trying.
Yeah. The character of the square is limitation. And the character of the concrete worlds is also limitation. In our vain estimation of our own selves, we sort of resent limitation. We don't like things holding us back. That's just a bad attitude, because limitation is what is good for us. The limitation of being here in the chemical region of the dense physical world is the strictest kind of limitation that one can have. But it also keeps us from experiencing something that we do not yet have the objective waking consciousness to comprehend. And so the lessons that we learn here in objectivity, and we apply them and we allow them to work their way into our spiritual consciousness, as we unfold that, it will have the same kind of objectivity that we have in our lessons here, the little ABCs that we learn here. So we can look, instead of looking at the limitations as something that is detrimental to our being, we can sort of look at them like training wheels on a bicycle. A little child needs the training wheels so that it doesn't tip over, and eventually you're going to take the training wheels off and you're going to be able to do much better. You're going to be able to bank on corners and things like that and do something you couldn't do before. So that's what we're trying to get at, is the square is training wheels. Now, we said that the trine, the archetypal trine, the happy, perfect, relaxing qualities, the universalizing qualities, we said that yesterday that the primary ruler of the epitomal trine is Venus, and that the secondary ruler is Jupiter. It takes perceptions and perfects them in the way that Christ orders or commands us to do when he says, be perfect as your Father in heaven is perfect. Be beginning to say, and to transcend it, you can be perfect, even though you can't do that here. All right. If we look at the interior of the square, if we connect, if we connect alternate vortices, we have a cross. And so the square is just as much a cross as it is the geometric figure that we see externally as a square. The cross is two folds played off against each other in the most difficult of all angles, of right angles. So the cross represents that there's a double polarity that takes place within the square. And one pole is always in positive elements, and one pole is always in negative elements. If we look at the astrological mandala, we have the fire and air on the ascendant and descendant. That's, well, those are two limbs of the cross. And then we have water and earth on the other. So there's something about the square that is always amalgamating elements that are contrary to each other. So the building that is here, that we do here in this world, is a building that part of the reason why it's very hard to deal with the square and why it's very hard to exist in this world. We experience it all the time. For the square, we have the mind, and we have the desire body, and we have the vital body, and we have the dense physical body. The mind wants to do one thing, but very often the desire body wants to do something else. Our emotions are something very different from what we have in our mind. And energy is yet something else. And when we try to finalize it and bring it into chemical matter, that's when things really get rough. So we are making a agglomerate, I think is what they call it in geology. We're trying to put together things that don't go together very well. And there isn't a good consistency. And so these are all things that rule the square. There are polarities between fire and air, and polarities between earth and water that are in the that are in the construction of the square that make for that kind of consciousness. Now the gyre of the square, I took on the gyres for today, it's a little too much, is 4. It means 1/4. The little wheel has to go be of such a size that it goes around 4 times before it comes to the same point, the home point, and the two circles is together. And this means that 4 and 3 put together produce a, with the trine and the square, produce the number 7, which is a number of completion. Now if we look at the points on the circle, we take the circle and break it open and make a straight line out of it the way Pythagoras did. The points on the circle represent nodes on a vibrating string. And where you put those points or notes produces different parts of harmonics. You can produce a whole scale on the string. So we can see that the nodes that form the geometric relationship of the aspects fit into everything like music. Even the metric structure of music is shown by the aspects. If you have we said earlier that the one, the conjunction, is like a drone. It's played once, but it's played once throughout the entire piece of music. And then we have music like 2-2 music, which is march music, divide and conquer, left, right, it's that kind of consciousness. 3-4 or 3-8 music is just like the trine. It's lilting, it's waltz music, it's happy music. You can't hear 3-8 music without feeling light and uplifted. I'm going to have to unwind the force here. when we get to 4-4 music, which is what is indicated by the square, we have 1-2-3-4, 1-2-3-4. The most basic of all music is 4-4 music, and a lot of pieces of music are written in 4-4 for that very building kind of quality. In the modern West history of music, symphonies are always in four parts. They're like the four seasons. There is something very natural about the division of time. The division of time as we experience it is breaking into something, into a circle. We have the natural sunrise and sunset, dividing the difference between day and night, and then we have noon and midnight, when the sun is straight overhead or straight below, so the day is broken into four quarters. The year is broken into four quarters by the equinoxes, and it is broken by the other quarters by the summer solstice and winter solstice. So the whole building process that takes place in each year, or that takes place in each day, is indicated by the square. So the square is a fundamental kind of building. Now in the past, in past years we've talked about the whole universe, including the atoms themselves, according to physics, are built according to the right-hand rule. We don't have time to go into that now, and it's just a little too much repetition, so we'll pass on doing all of that today. Let's see here. I get lost in these things. The effect of having two poles played off against each other is it takes the instability effect of the opposition and stabilizes it. This is why the four elements do that. If you have a pole, you have like a rivalry. This side goes ahead and then this side goes ahead. And it's like the vibration of something going up and down. But if you have something at right angles, it's like if you're trying to pull something with a rope and it's pulling back, if you pull at right angles around a tree or something like that, you gain all kinds of mechanical advantage, and the lines of force on the two sections of the rope on either side of the tree, those lines of force become very much stabilized. It's hard to break that down. And so when we're talking about the double pole, we're talking about stability. And that is one of the qualities of the square. It is basic, it is stable. So we have seen several things about the square now. It tests, it measures, it stabilizes, and it compounds things together. Now we can see that things are built by the square. If we look at the cosmic square on the cosmic mandala, as we just did before, the horizontal, the first horizontal, the initiatory horizontal is ruled by Mars. But if we take the vertical, the height of the vertical, that is ruled by Saturn. And Saturn and Mars is the primary ruler of the square, and Saturn is the secondary ruler of the square. So the energy and the restraint of energy are what go into the building. And so the square then becomes a building consciousness. If it were only Mars, it would be a burst of energy. It would be like fireworks. It would be beautiful, and there'd be all kinds of energy. Things would be popping, and then it would fizzle out. If it were only Saturn, things would get stopped down, and things would be concreted or accreted or something like that until there was no movement at all. Saturn would like that. It would like to stop everything, because if it could stop everything, it would have ultimate control. Nothing could get out of its control. So when you have the combination of Saturn and Mars, you have energy that is applied, and you have control for that energy so that it is not misapplied, and this is how things are built. So if it were only Mars, we would run off haphazard and we would have all kinds of accidents and mistakes and things like that. If it were only Saturn, we would have precaution after precaution after precaution, we wouldn't get anything done. But if we apply caution to the assertion of energy, it becomes the best that we can do for building. They're both very down-to-earth planets. Both Mars and Saturn are considered primitive planets. It's the basic energy and it's the basic concretion. But there's nothing wrong with primitivity, because primitivity starts things at the most basic level. And when you're at the most basic level, then the sophistication can come after you have realized mechanical perfection. You realize that the aspects of Mars and Saturn are aspects of perfection, or mechanical perfection, where every last little bit of energy is channeled into something positive. Now we have to talk about a subject that is unpleasant to talk about. All of that we have said about the square and about Mars and Saturn has been basically pretty positive. And most of what takes place in the world is pretty positive. That, you know, this is a building process that's going on. And it's a wonderful temple that we're building and remodeling all the time. But we as human beings have somehow brought discord into all of this. And this discord comes with two different flavors of wrongdoing. And those two different flavors of wrongdoing are indicated by Mars and Saturn. Martial wrongdoing is Luciferic, where we get egged on by our own desires. Go ahead and do it. Well, you know, you've seen those pictures, cartoons, where you got the little angel on one shoulder and the little demon on the other shoulder. The little demon says, go ahead, do it, do it. Look at that pretty woman, you know, that kind of thing. So Mars represents the sins of commission. But then after that, after we've experienced a few mistakes, because Mars just doesn't think ahead at all, it's just, you know, after we've had a few mistakes and we have suffered from them, we become overly cautious. And we get to the Saturnian kinds of sins or the Saturnian kinds of temptations. That person over there is being mugged. Don't get involved. It is the sin of omission, where no, I'm not going to get involved with that. I'm going to stay clean from all of that. And so all of the basic, most basic wrong things that human beings do usually can be attributed to Mars and Saturn. So now when we're going to look at horoscopes that have the classic Mars-Saturn aspects to them, there's a possibility that we're going to have to look at some people that are not such nice people. I have decided, you know, a few years ago we took a trip through the lower desire world, and we looked at the horoscopes of Martina Saad and Robert Mapplethorpe and a whole bunch of people like that, and I decided that was too much. So I tried to choose positive people with Mars square Saturn, and for the most part we've been successful. Now, I don't think I have enough horoscopes to go around, so people are going to have to share. And I'm going to exercise the sin of omission. And I'm going to say, I'm not going to get involved with how the horoscopes are shared. You're going to have to decide for yourself how they're going to share. Of course, everybody's going to, because Tara is young and pretty, everybody's going to want to share horoscopes with her. Again, this is not real astrology we're doing. We're going to look at things very lightly. We're going to go through things very fast. I'm working toward it now. Eventually, in a few years, I'm going to have a huge, great, big television screen like this that's about 5 feet by 5 feet. And then we'll put the horoscopes on the television screen and everybody can see them and we can say, oh, we have more than enough. We have enough, huh? Okay, good. All right.
You have one more?
I did.
I'm sure. Why?
All right, well, the first horoscope is Bonnie Lee Begley. And it may be the most difficult horoscope that we have to deal with. It's, you know, this is one of those horoscopes we have to look at somebody who has a penchant for doing wrong. She is the woman who was married to Robert Blake. And she was,
why did we end up in jail?
Not murder, right?
Wasn't he accused of murdering Bonnie?
I think it was accused of murder.
I think we
and he was in jail and house arrest.
That
yeah, in house arrest.
And she married him and had his daughter, but there was some concern about whether he was the father of the daughter. And so they went to the DNA testing and it would show him that he was 99.9 likelihood to be the father. The son in this horoscope is just about unaspected. And in Gemini, there's a tendency for a person to not be really strong and resolute about things in any which way. The strength of Gemini is his ability to adapt to everything and to not be like a Scorpio like me that tries to stand there like a block that nobody can get around. So she was sort of she's sort of a person who just floats this way and that way. She doesn't have any real purpose in life. So she's isolated and subjective. She's in the fourth house and she's got that kind of isolation. What she didn't have in herself, this is a really good psychological study, what she didn't have in herself, she tried to find in other people. So she was a celebrity chaser. And she hit the jackpot when she finally got Robert Blake and got into a sexual relationship. This is what she had been looking for all of her life. Now the Saturn-Mars square, Mars being the first house, is a grand square. And in that grand square, there is also Mercury, there's also the Moon, and there is Pluto and Jupiter. So we have six planets in the grand square. They're not all in exact orb with each other, but by association, there's a revolving association, so there is a square there. Now her life is filled by lies, or filled with lies. Saturn is opposite Mercury, and that is almost a chronic liar. So this is the kind of consciousness the Neptune planets, where Mars, Pisces planet, where Mars is, indicates there's a lot of deception. And so there's lies and deceptions and things like that. She had many false identities. She had probably, when they caught her, when they investigated her after her death, she had at least 11 driver's licenses. And she not only went for celebrity, she went for everyone. It's estimated that she had 100 husbands around the country. Because what she did, she took nude pictures of herself and she sold them or sent them over the email. That was email and by regular mail. So she was, in her own mind, she was a celebrity, but she was conning people. And if we look at the Pluto and Saturn part, they're in the latter parts of fixed signs. This is something very dark and something very heavy. So there's something of a slowness about this and a coldness. She was not a warm person. Now what happened is she had been fighting with Robert Blake as her husband. He married her when it was proved that he was the father of the child. And they had been fighting. And he took her to a restaurant. And he parked the car on a side street behind a trash bin where the car couldn't be seen. And the street light overhead just happened to be burned up. So the car was in a dark, obscure place that couldn't be seen. And they went to the restaurant. And they went back to the car. And Robert Blake said, "I forgot my pistol. My pistol was at the restaurant. Wait here, I'll be right back." And when he got back, she had been shot in the head. And it looks awfully much like Robert Blake did the murder, but they couldn't prove it. He had been in so many detective shows that he had even bragged at one point in his life that he could get away with murder if he wanted to, because he knew the ins and outs of how the police system worked. Maybe he did, and maybe he didn't. We will probably never know unless we can find it in the etheric record in the memory of nature and see it. Neptune is in the eighth house, and this means that the cause of death is likely to be unknown and maybe never discovered. What we want to look at is at the Mars-Saturn square, because we're looking at the square. This is an example of a construction. It is a construction of a false persona. She's got all this daring of Mars in the first house and all of the scheming of Saturn in Scorpio in the ninth house, and using that because she doesn't have a personality or a character of her own with the sun being unaspected, she manufactures one. It happens to be, she has built something that is false, and it's something that's deceptive, and it has many, many different facets to it, but this is an example of somebody who is using the Mars Saturn to build, but what they're building is completely false and has no integrity. The self is not put into it, and as a result, she ended up with a violent kind of death. All right, let's look at the next horoscope real quickly. We're almost supposed to be done with the interview, right? The next horoscope is the horoscope of Ian Fleming. It's somewhat similar in that Mars doesn't have much of an aspect. It has the Sun doesn't have any aspects. It has a sextile to Saturn, and that's it. Now, Ian Fleming was a rich kid, and he was spoiled. He was brought up to just enjoy himself, and he didn't have much purpose in life. And if you look at this horoscope, the Moon is square to Neptune and Venus. So what he did is he amused himself by playing with women. He didn't have to spend, didn't need money for anything. He did do some work as a spy during the Second World War, but he really didn't do much of anything. Now, his life is made difficult by the fact, the difficulty of his life is indicated by the Saturn in the first house. And Saturn in the first house is a personality that's unimpressive. With the Mars in the first house, it's somebody that's bold and it's out there for everybody to see. But like in this one, you have Saturn in the first house. It's not very impressive. In fact, a lot of people shun people with Saturn in the first house, because they're the wet blanket for everything. They all say no to everything. Nobody wants to hear no. Mars is in its fall in Cancer, And that's sort of like treading water. You're spending a lot of energy in active water and you're churning it and churning it, but you're not going anywhere. And that's what that's like. So this is a charge like of somebody who's stuck. So what he did is he became bored with not having much to do with life. And so what he did is he built a false personality. He went the sun in the third house. He did this through literature. And so he built this false personality that wasn't a ne'er-do-well, do-nothing nerd like he was himself. He built James Bond. And James Bond knew everything. He was attractive. He had all the tech and technology and everything like that. And James Bond was everything that Ian Fleming wasn't. Now, when he did this, he knew what he was doing. He was not deceiving himself, and he was not unconscious like Bonnie Lee Bickley. He was not trying to con the world, and he was not trying to take advantage of things for himself. What he did is he did this as a joke. So all of the James Bond books are really a joke, but people take them seriously. Why? Because they all feel like they are do-nothing nerds, and they want some glamour in their life, and so it's a guy's, you know, James Bond is a guy thing. Women can see through it right away. They're not in the least interested in James Bond, but the guys with all those flashy cars with knives that come out of the wheels and cut somebody's tires up and things like that, that's a guy thing. And another guy thing is, see, what your character is, you can't get rid of when you start writing. And he puts it into his, into the characters in his horoscope. Now, Neptune and Venus and the moon being square, this shows this is somebody that really fantasizes about women. Fantasizes about women a lot. And so what do we find in the James Bond movie? All of these fantastic babes, these boom boom babes, and they all are in love with James Bond. And that's a perfect expression of what the square of moon to Neptune and Venus is like. So, all right.
Let's look at Neptune and Venus square or conjunct?
Neptune and Venus are conjunct, but they're square to the moon.
Wait a second.
Okay. And those are the three times that are most likely to imagination.
It's a sex.
Oh, I'm sorry. It's a sextile. Same thing.
It's a sextile.
Positive. Oh, okay. It's a more. It's a joke to himself also.
It seems like an obvious joke.
Yes, it is an obvious joke. All right, Margot Fonteyn. This is somebody who does not have identity problems. In this case, we find the sign. This is that the sun is conjoined to Mars, which is a strong self-image, and they're in Taurus. This is somebody who has a rock-solid self-identity. And she doesn't have personal problems. She does have Uranus in the first house, which makes her to be unorthodox, and she is inclined toward the left. She was involved with leftist politics quite a bit in her life. She was both a bohemian and a radical. But she did build personality. But she built personality in a different way. The Mars, again, is square to Saturn. And the Sun is thrown in there. But this is, Saturn rules the ascendant in this case, and Saturn is opposite to the ascendant, and so that she, this is a person who worked on bodybuilding. She built the body of a dancer. If you've looked at horoscopes for ballerinas, or if you've been, my ex-wife was a dancer, and there's as much Saturn in Mars as there is Venus among ballerinas. And this was somebody, you work on something and you build something until you have it to mechanical perfection. And that is the way that the Mars square Saturn worked in this horoscope. She developed her body so that it was precise, like it was a machine. It was that kind of perfection. Now, she was still dancing at a very late age when Rudolf Nureyev came to the United States. And they did that very fabulous thing. I have a copy if you'd like to borrow it. I am very fascinated by the music of Sergei Prokofiev. And Sergei Prokofiev did a ballet of Romeo and Juliet. And it is some of the most beautiful music you ever want to hear in your life. In the balcony scene, it opens up in the background, goom, 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 goom. Those are the stars twinkling. It feels like a beautiful, beautiful music. And then you see Romeo come sinking up from tree to tree in the shadows. And it just from the music alone, you can see the ballet. But Rudolf Nureyev was at the prime of his career, and when he defected from Russia, they let him defect because he was a homosexual and they were not so keen on homosexuals. When he defected and came to the United States, they did Romeo and Juliet. And the only ballerina who could do it was Margot Fonteyn. And she was she was like a warhorse. She was powerful. And she retired as a ballerina at age 60.
Wow.
Yeah, the people don't do that, you know. But I have, they filmed it. And I have a DVD of the entire of Romeo and Juliet by Prokofiev as danced by Nureyev and Margot Fonteyn. If any of you would like to borrow it, I'll try to find it.
First.
Okay.
You have to play it here for us. During a break.
Oh, it's long. It's very long. The sword fight, you can actually hear in the music. When it was first performed and Prokofiev was alive, the prima ballerina said this is such strange music and didn't understand it. And they kept immersing themselves in the music, and the more they did, the more they could see what he intended by his greater impressionism. All right. So what we're talking about here is physical bodybuilding. And physical bodybuilding to accomplish something. To accomplish something so that your movements are perfect. If you're throwing yourself in the air and somebody has to catch you, and they have to catch you if they are in a particular type of pose, you have to be precise. If you aren't precise, you know, there are broken legs and things like that. All right. She did have some temperamental outbreaks. She has the Mars and Uranus are not always good with each other here. Where is it? Oh, there is a mild square between the Sun and Mars to Uranus, so she had some temperamental outbreaks, but you can't have a ballerina or a diva without having some temperamental outbreaks. That's a travesty against you. All right. The next horoscope, everybody knows the next horoscope, is Ernest Hemingway. We have a lot of writers in this round. This is also the horoscope of someone trying to build a new persona. And we have Mars in the first house. He's trying to build a new persona, but he isn't doing it just in writing. And he isn't doing it just in jest. He's not at all like Ian Fleming. He's not doing it for fun. He's serious, and he's deadly serious. The new persona is signified by Mars. And so he tries to show himself as being a macho, masculine person. But Virgo is not a he-man sign. So most of his masculinity was in his mind and in his writing and not in reality. Mars is square to Neptune, so this is a false persona. Now we have to find the reason why he's building this new persona. He has the sun in Cancer, and the moon is the ruler of Cancer, and it's in its detriment in Capricorn, and it's opposite to Venus. This means that he did not understand the feminine, he did not understand women, and he was vacillatory about them. He had a very strong, dominating mother. You can see that from the planets in the 10th house and from the strength of the moon. And the feminine planets, the moon and Venus, are not integrated with the other planets. So he probably sees himself with the sun in Cancer and these kinds of disposition of moon and Venus, he sees himself as being womanish. And he doesn't want to admit this to himself. And so he tries to build a new persona with the Mars square Saturn. Somewhere deep in his own, his father, he was a negative figure to him. The father, opportunities to know the father is indicated by the fourth house. Max Heindel teaches that quite clearly. And it shows that there are a lot of dark feelings about his father. His father committed suicide. He belongs to the Ernest Hemingway. The Hemingway family is a pedigree for depressive suicides. His father and his uncle and quite a few people in his family committed suicide. They would get depressed and they would commit suicide. Yes.
Did he himself?
Yes, he killed himself from suicide. He took a shotgun and blasted himself away. Mm-hmm. They let him out of the mental institution and they let him go to his place in Idaho. And they tried to keep watch on him. But the very first day that he was out, he ran for the shotgun and he just blasted himself. The kingdom come. So what we're looking at here, he's trying to build this new persona because he doesn't like the feminine in himself and he's at war with his father. But he represses the feminine in himself. He represses the fact that he feels womanish. And when you repress things, that is one of the causes of depression. And so he has all of these things, the depression becomes enormous. The three most depressive planets are Saturn, Neptune, and Pluto. They're all involved in this. This is a very depressive combination. So you can't repress, you can't hold things down. And so his building was false building, and he even used it as his alibi. A real man is not afraid to commit suicide or to take himself out, and that's what he did. He took himself out.
Where is the suicide indicated in the chart?
Just from the depression.
Just the depression, but yeah. I mean,
the cause of death is indicated by the eighth house. Yeah. Mars is in that T square with Saturn and Pluto and with Neptune. So the relief from the depressive part of the of that T-square comes from Mars, which happens to rule the house of death, and so he won't shirk from violent action against his own person, the person that he created. He sort of died by the monster that he created in himself. And I'm not trying to be talk. It's easy to stand up here and talk like that. But I'm not trying to be uncompassionate to him because he obviously was a very troubled man. All right, probably I'm the only person in the room who knows the next horoscope. This is the horoscope of a matriarch. Her name is Elsbeth Eberton. And she started a lineage of astrologers in Germany. Her son is one of the most famous astrologers of his generation. I think he might still be alive. Her grandson and other children underneath him are also famous German astrologers. However, they call themselves cosmobiologists. And we
if you call yourself a cosmobiologist, it means you're ashamed of being an astrologer. In fact, they had a conference on cosmobiology in somewhere in Europe, and they invited Ronald Davidson to speak. And Ronald Davidson was part of the Theosophical Society, and he was a high integrity man, and he was plain spoken. And they put him up on the speaker stand, and he said, "Why are we calling ourselves cosmobiology when it is astrology that we're doing? Why don't we call a spade because we're doing astrology? Why don't I call it?" He says, "This is like the street sweepers in my city. The street sweepers in my city wanted to call themselves sanitation engineers, but they were still sweeping streets." And this, so, but at any rate, the Evertons, not Elsbeth, were a little bit phony. And we look at this horoscope. This is high integrity. The Sun conjoins Pluto. You can't get a more rock-solid view of self for a solid character, for somebody that was always reliable. We see a lot of planets here, 5 planets in Taurus. And a lot of those planets involve are in an aspects with the Moon and Mars, which is another very feminine sign, showing that this is somebody that knows a lot about love. She's the first one to write a book about relationships of love. In this case, the Saturn square Mars is between the self, the second, and the 11th houses. And Saturn rules the 8th house as well, the house of death. Now, normally, there is a struggle, a natural struggle between the 11th house and the 2nd house, because they're square to each other. And this is built right into human folk language. We say, if you want to lose a friend, lend that friend money. And that's the square between the 2nd house and the 11th house. And that's just exactly what it's like. But she wasn't like that. She used the square. This is probably the most positive use of the square that you're going to find. She used it to be reliable and for her friends to trust her. This is what happened in the Second World War. Elsbeth Everton had privileges that other people didn't have. She had privileges of movement. When they were bombing Berlin, some people could move around and some people couldn't. Now, this was a person that was so highly esteemed that everybody looked up to her. And they trusted her because of her uncanny ability at astrology. And when the bombing raids would come, the people would watch Elsbeth Everton. And they'd say, as long as she's with us, we know the bomb isn't going to hit in this neighborhood. Well, Elsbeth Everton did see the bomb coming to the neighborhood, and she could have gotten out. But she didn't want to have all the friends, all the people who trust her, she didn't want them to be a bunch of scared rats. So she stayed and she took the bomb. This is building character with integrity. This is somebody who's willing to sacrifice, because those two crosses, those two poles inside the square are a cross. And the best that can come out of the square is sacrifice. And so this is an individual who is willing to sacrifice. Now, isn't this marvelous how all of these different people can use the square in such different ways? Some use it to get out of their nerdiness. Some use it to destroy themselves in falsity. But it's just really, I'm always fascinated by how the same aspects in astrology can be used so many different ways. All right, let's look at the last horoscope. Another writer, for some reason, I got into the Avenger, looking at writers and looking at all these law schools. This is another literary individual, the very great Charles Dickens, certainly the greatest writer in his time, and some consider him the greatest writer in England of all time. But even though he was a great writer, doesn't necessarily mean that he was a nice man. He grew up in poverty. We have Saturn in the fourth house, showing that his family life was very strict. He belonged to a family that was going into decline. And eventually, his father was put into debtor's prison. And when he was put into debtor's prison, Charles Dickens was on the streets. He was what it was called a street waif. He loved people. And as a street person, he loved and studied every person that he saw. And he became very much of a humanist. One doesn't have to read but a little bit of Charles Dickens to know that he loves people. The sun is in Aquarius, which is the sign of humanism. And it's sextile to the Neptune and Moon in Sagittarius, which are very, very philosophical. So in his inward being, he is a humanist, and through the third house, he writes about them, human beings. But he was not so much a humanist that he wasn't a sexist. The moon, which is one of the feminine planets, is square to Venus, which is another one of the feminine planets. And there is that big square there between the conjunction of Moon and Neptune to Venus and Pluto. And this is what came out in his life. He didn't understand women. And because he didn't understand them, he did some of the same things that Ian Fleming did. He fantasized. And then he developed love obsessions for his fantasies. The obsessive love obsessions is the conjunction of Venus and Pluto. The fantasy is Venus and the moon in negative aspects with Neptune. And this is what happened. Now, when there is fantasy, you're not accepting reality. And when you don't accept reality and stuff it back, it again leads to depression. This is another person who was a depressive individual. The depression in this case being indicated by the Moon and Neptune square to Pluto. At first it was mild depression, but it continued on and became somewhat severe. He was with his Saturn, which we're trying to get to the Saturn square Mars, he was wanting to have a perfect house. He wanted to be in control in everything in his house. Saturn squares Mars, and Mars is in Aries, and he looked at his wife as being too independent for having the perfect, the controlled marriage and family. So what he did is he dismissed his wife, and she sort of just lived in the house like one of the kids. And he liked the way that his sister raised children, so he brought his wife's sister, his sister-in-law, he brought her in to be the proxy wife and mother, or at least the proxy mother, not the wife. So once she was sort of a martial figure, she was another side of Mars. She wasn't so unreliable as her sister, but the one who became the surrogate mother was sort of a field marshal of the family. And so once the family was in control, then Charles Dickens could operate freely on the squares of Venus and Pluto to Neptune and the Moon. And so he started an illicit affair, which he conducted very, very publicly with a very young showgirl, about whom he had all sorts of fantasies. And because he was famous, even though he was an old man, he could have this pretty young mistress, and he carried on this affair with her. And the whole of London was scandalized by it, but he didn't care. He was living on it in his obsessive family. Again, we have a case of somebody building something, but the building is forced. Mars and Saturn can both be planets of force, and it isn't going to work that way. In this case, force leads the fantasy. And that's about all I have to say, so let's close with the Rosicrucian prayer. Oh God, increase our love for thee, so that we may serve thee better from day to day. Because the words of our mouths and the meditation of our hearts be accessible to thy strength, O Lord, our strength and our redeemer. You'd be glad to get to the sextile.
Yeah.
No. It's always tough when you have to deal with, especially with the Mars Saturn square. No questions?
You don't really give.
Yeah, you can do it.